I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to the Double Clutch Podcast. I'm Mike Miller. Tonight, I am joined by my former friend, now enemy, nay, nemesis. It's Nick, the Destroyer of Dreams, Whitfield.
Thanks, Mike. It's a good intro. For some context for anyone listening, watching, I bought this jersey from Hoop and Alutin. Mike wanted it. I bought it just to troll Mike.
And he's wearing it, just to rub it in further. And also joining us, as you can see, sitting smugly over there, we have the round mound of the sterling pound. It's Josh Coyne. No offence intended. I said I was coming in hot.
How am I not meant to take that? With offense. But yeah, I appreciate that. Hello. Hello, basketball fans, and hello to the Destroyer of Dreams.
As always, we have Mr. Kirk Killick sat behind the wheel, making all this thing look magical. For those of you who are watching on Twitch, if you're not, it's twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk. Please make sure you're following us on all social media platforms at Double Clutch UK, and come join our Discord community on discord.me/doubleclutch. We are, of course, here to discuss the NBA in all its fine. Just awesomeness. Shout out to those who already tuned into the stream. Let's get cracking then, shall we? So we'll start off with some news because there's been lots of it, but we're not even going to go NBA first. We're going to go slightly offbeat here, but we're going to the Euros, baby. Team GB are going to Eurobasket 2022 after beating Germany on a buzzer-beating layup from Luke Nelson. It was 83-81. They then needed France to beat Montenegro later that evening to secure qualification. That happened. We also beat France earlier this evening, smashed them 94-73. The team that are ranked sixth in the world. We're not going to say anything about the actual team they put out, other than it's the highest-ranked team GB have ever beaten. I assume both of you are up to date with that and saw that fantastic falling away left-handed scoop layup from Reading Rockets' finest. What, I'm going to call it Reading Rockets' finest and former LA Clippers Summer League team standout Luke Nelson.
Yeah, just as a product of the Reading Rockets Basketball Academy myself, that play did really remind me of my own game. So it was nice to see that. Yeah, full credit to Luke. He had two incredible games against France and Germany. A couple of other guys caught my eye in those games as well. Ovi Soko, everyone knows him, not just of Love Island fame, but incredible player. I'd say he's up there for, in terms of like transition players the UK's ever produced, he has to be up there. And also Gabe Oluseni as well, who's just an absolute monster in the paint. It's a really talented lineup now. The guys like Dan Clark, who've been there quite a long time now. Good mix of age and experience. Yeah, incredible achievement by those guys.
I was sure that when you were saying Reading Rockets finest was that you were just going to throw to Nick immediately. The best tweet that I have seen today, I think, is I apologize because I can't remember who tweeted it, but someone said, so the UK beats France and France beat the US. Does that mean, you know what I'm saying? It was excellent to see. Nelson's obviously buzzer beat was tremendous, but like Nick said, great team effort with Oluseni. Miles Hessen as well to beat Germany. Mm-hmm. I think that there are many reasons to feel somewhat optimistic as a British basketball fan at the moment. And a lot of that's going to be discussed later in the podcast, but that's definitely one of them. Going to the Euros, baby.
Do you think, you know, this could be a turning point in terms of, you know, basketball in the UK in general? Am I being my usual naive self? I mean, we've seen reports of the consumption of the NBA rocket in Europe with more European players making it there. We obviously don't have anyone outside of OG Anunoby at the minute, and his link to the UK is tenuous. Mm-hmm. Do you think we could somehow capitalize on this moment as a way of building the sport in the UK?
Well, if you look at also the Cameron Hildreth optimism that's been around the BBL in the recent weeks, mm-hmm. definitely think so. It feels like one of those moments where more than ever, there are kind of like beacons of hope for in terms of actual British basketball product, not necessarily just kind of, like you said, the OG Ananobis of the world who have UK links but have grown up in the kind of system of American basketball. It's definitely exciting. Nick, what do you think? I know that you're more attuned to the world of some of these players.
Yeah, I think it can often be GB basketball can get a bad rap sometimes, because when you look at how much European basketball in general has improved, when you look at countries like Spain or Slovenia with their current generation, or Germany or France, or these guys who are producing top NBA talent levels, I think that hides a little bit how much better the GB setup is now than, like, I remember watching England games when I was 14, 15, say, and there is no, that's no disrespect to the guys who played then, obviously, but there is no comparison in terms of how much better this team is than and back then. And the whole setup's improved a lot. There's a lot of teams, again, I'm going to shout out Reading, but there's lots of teams out there now who have proper youth academies set up, dedicated to not only produce like winning teams themselves, but actually focus on player development. And that's great for the game. And it's funny, actually, talking about Cameron Hildreth, I commentated on at least one of his games last season, I remember, where he was incredible. And it's one of the biggest frustrations, among many, obviously, with lockdown, is that I live down the road from Surrey Scorchers and can't watch those games. So pretty frustrating.
I can totally relate to that at the moment, because it's not British basketball product.
You're going to talk about Gino Crandall, aren't you?
Yeah.
I
believe that Gino is one of the most, you know, special talents we've had in the BBL for a really long time. And I live down the road from their arena in Leicester, and I'm missing the opportunity to see him, because let's just say I don't think it's a lock that he'll be in the UK next season.
Well, I'm jealous of both of you, although not as much because obviously it's lockdown, because I live in Kent, where most of the basketball courts had flooded grass on them last week. So I don't know what that says about the place down here, but there are some all right teams down in the area, so I won't slander them too much. Let's move on to the NBA. Players of the week just got announced. Damian Lillard, 36.3 points, 12.7 assists, 5.7 rebounds, leading the Blazers to a 2-1 week. James Harden, 31.8 assists, 31.8 points, 10.8 assists, 9 rebounds, 4-0 week for the Nets. It's been a pretty big week in general. We had 50 pieces dropped from Jamal Murray with no free throws. Joel Embiid set his career high and was the first sixer to drop 50 since, I want to say, Iverson in 04, I think it was. And also LeBron smashed through the 35,000-point barrier. And that's probably the biggest thing we need to talk about in terms of what happened this week. There was a question, will he overtake Karl Malone and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar? I think the answer is pretty obvious. Are we all the consensus that by the time this guy hangs up his Nikes, he is going to be the number one scorer, full stop?
Well, I think that it's inevitable that he'll break the record. If we're projecting him to eventually play in the league with his son, that gives him the time to log points, even if his rate of scoring does kind of dip as the years go on. I feel like he's kind of got that Iron Man-like ability to avoid injury, which is obviously going to serve him well if it continues. I see him kind of like the Undertaker of the NBA, where he's just going to keep kind of choke-slamming his way all the way past Kareem. 3,000 left, you know, a couple of power bombs, a couple of last rides, which is exactly why he's been taking all of the kind of technical free throws when the Lakers need one to be taken, regardless of who the best free throw shooter is.
Does that make Rich Paul the, what was he called?
Paul Bearer.
The Paul Bearer. There you go, Paul Bearer.
R.I.P. by the way.
Rich Paul Bearer. Oh, is he dead? Oh, well. That killed that joke.
Rich Paul Bearer is very good, though.
Nick, are you in agreement? He's got to get the number one spot, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think he is a human computer anyway, and he will have done the math on what as many arguments as he can achieve that will make him people think he's the GOAT, he will inevitably achieve. So he'll do it just out of spite for that reason. But also, I think in terms of his all-around game, I shared something to the Discord this week that I'm going to look at just because I wrote it down so I said it properly. So LeBron has over 35,000 points, 9,000 rebounds and 9,000 assists, and not a single other player in NBA history has 27,000 points, 7,000 rebounds or 7,000 assists. And the only guy even near that mark is Oscar Robertson, who played in the era where everyone put up stupid numbers. So the guy's in like not only a class of his own, but like multiple tiers above anyone else in NBA history in terms of his like overall statistical production at this point. So if he can finish like literally top in points by the end of his career as well, that's crazy. Like, I didn't think Kareem's record would ever be broken. So if he does that again, that's yeah, another feather in his cap for GOAT status potentially. I know, I know that's slander to
year 18, he's averaged 27 points per game for his career. Karl Malone played one season more, 19 seasons, averaged 25 points per game. He's effectively, if he carries on at this rate, 70 games off Karl Malone. So midway through next season, he should pass him. And then Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, 20 seasons, 24.6 points per game. So he's about 124 games off Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, which basically means if he carries on at this rate, the first or second game of the 22-23 season, we should have a new top point scorer ever, which is just fantastic. And what's crazy is that this is just regular season. He's also got another 7,491 playoff points on top of that, giving him a total of 42,527, which is just absolutely jaw-dropping. Appreciate the greatness whilst it's here. Long may it continue. Long may it make me feel completely inadequate that despite being 6 months older, I have not scored a single point, let alone 42,000 of them in the NBA. Let's move on. Some more news. Last night, Ryan Saunders is out as the head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves, with Chris Finch being tipped strongly as his replacement. He was appointed on the 6th of January 2019 as an interim head coach. That must have been after Tibbs, right? If I don't pay enough attention to the Timberwolves because they're the Timberwolves. He's obviously the son of Timberwolves legend Flip Saunders. Rest in peace to him too. He joined his dad's coaching staff in Washington in 2009, stayed with them for 4 or 5 years, then became an assistant in Minnesota. He coached 137 games, only won 43 of them. That's a measly 31.4%. It was about time he went. Are you surprised at all that it took this long to get rid of him? And what are your thoughts on the Finchie replacement? Nick, come to you first.
So I am not particularly surprised either by the amount of time it took, just because I don't feel like the Timberwolves were... Let me put it this way. I don't think from what we've seen in hindsight, I don't think the Timberwolves as a franchise were like surprised that they weren't contending. They looked like they had a good roster. I was high on them compared to a lot of people, but watching it on court, it just hasn't worked particularly well. But I'm going to talk a little bit more about Chris Finch, just because I think I have an interesting perspective on him, because if you got into basketball later and you're not a BBL fan, one thing that will probably be interesting to people listening is how Nick Nurse and him were kind of big rivals in the BBL back in those days. Chris Finch with Sheffield and Nick Nurse with the Towers, Brighton Bears and Manchester Giants and a few different clubs. And what is interesting is Nick Nurse in the NBA has become really known as like an X and O's guy. But in the BBL, Nick Nurse was really known as like the recruiter. He was able to get like the best American players in the league to play for his teams. And Chris Finch was known as the better X and O's coach. So I'm going to be really fascinated to see what a team in the NBA coached by him looks like. He brought some of the best players I've seen in the BBL. There was one guy called Terrell Myers, who was essentially like a BBL Ray Allen. There was a guy out of University of Michigan called Travis Conlon, who played point guard alongside him. And there was a guy called Lenard Stewart, who was like a freak athlete in the front court, who went to Auburn, I think. And getting those like top level D1 guys was like a regular thing at that point in the BBL. So It was, and I think the BBL is getting there now with, like, as we talked about, players like Gino Crandall, but there was a big money thing, obviously, in the BBL. But Chris Finch, to me, and Nick Nurse, obviously, represent when there was a real high point in our domestic league at that point. So, yeah, I really can't wait to see him get started.
Yeah, and just to add a caveat to what Nick said, he was able to bring in, Nurse was able to bring in some of the best American players and Dennis Rodman. I personally think it's obviously rough for, you know, Ryan Saunders. So from a personal point of view with Ryan Saunders, not the storybook ending that people would hope for. Obviously, he was brought in, you know, as a interim at first. But because of the familial links, it's sad to see him go and it not work out the way we'd hoped for. But you can't escape a 7-24 record on the season. He's, you know, had some rough circumstances without his best player for a large portion of time. But Finch, if they see him as an upgrade, you have to take it. From a Timberwolves point of view, the interesting thing for me is that they clearly think that, you know, the available option in Finch was there and it was worth taking, because this year is projected to be obviously a very strong draft class. And if they are losing an overwhelming majority of their games, they have a really good chance of gaining someone like Cade Cunningham to combine with Edwards. So in a way, a lot of Wolves fans are probably thinking it's time to just let the tank roll. And, you know, when you get a new coach in, sometimes it can galvanize some momentum and you can start winning games, and then that would hurt your chances in the draft. So it's just an interesting thing from that point of view. But there's also a lot to be said for kind of getting a losing culture, you know, gaining that by losing so many games and kind of everyone falling out, etc. To elaborate on what Nick said about Chris Finch, bloody good rep, by the way. I think it's great for British basketball fans because, similarly to Nurse, as Nick mentioned, he's a former BBL coach, two-time BBL champ. And as I mentioned at the start of the podcast, that can't be bad for British basketball as a whole to have two representatives or alumni of the BBL at head coaching positions. The interesting thing with that is, throughout the last 10 years or so, if you look at Greg Popovich and his situation at the Spurs, there's been a culture of respect and a level of respect that he's had and the organization's had, where every coach who seems to stop by at the Spurs ends up with a high-profile job afterwards somewhere in the NBA. It's interesting because Nick Nurse has gained such a high, you know, he's so highly regarded at this point for what he did in Toronto, and the organization is so well run. It's really interesting to see if that continues, where every one of those guys who stops by Nurse's team maybe then gets a higher opportunity, climbs up the NBA ladder, because he's already shown willingness to bring in former BBL guys such as Fabulous Flannoy, who's on the Toronto staff now. So that could be a potential avenue right to the top for many of the coaches who have spent years in the BBL. And that's really exciting. If you look at the guys like Vince McCauley or Rob Paternostro, who have been in this league for winning regularly in this league for years, then, you know, it just seems like a possible avenue to join a team like that. And because of the amazing reputation they have in Toronto, it could be a way to move up the ladder, in my opinion.
Yeah, even players. I'm going to throw a hot one out there and say someone like Mike Tuck, who spent his career with the Sharks, like Finch did, when he eventually retires and goes into coaching and works his way up, he's already got ties to Toronto, worked out for them in the draft, whichever year it was he was coming out, wasn't drafted. But they seem to have, you know, a long memory and lots of ties. And obviously he's another BBL guy. I mean, that's huge that the league has managed to get two guys into the NBA. So like in terms of Finch, in terms of his backstory, he played from 93 to 97 for the Sharks, got them from the old D2 into the top flight, and then sort of coached them from 97 to 2003, which was like their era. You mentioned Terrell Myers earlier. I think he hit the game winner, like an epic game winner, step back, or sort of fall away long two. He coached in Germany and Belgium after that. Then he went to the G League. from 2011 to 2016, he was with the Rockets, which is where he knows Gerson Roses. And it just seemed a bit odd that within hours of firing Saunders, they're already lining up, although it's not been officially confirmed yet, but it's, you know, overwhelming rumor is that it's Finch who's going to get this job. Then he was with the Nuggets, the Pelicans, and then most recently with the Raptors as an assistant. He was also talked about for the Pelicans head coaching job before he went to Van Gundy, and also for the Pacers head coaching vacancy last summer. And of course, he was the 2012 GB Olympic team coach with Nurse on the staff as well. How disruptive do you guys think it will be for the Raptors that they lose this? What, as you said, he's widely considered as an X's and O's guy. He's widely considered as an extremely good offensive coach. How big of an impact do you think that is mid-season to lose your assistant coach? Because usually we get like an interim coach or something, someone to just keep the ball rolling. But no, they've gone and got someone else's staff mid-season.
I think it's pretty big. And I think those guys are really good friends anyway, dating back from their guys in their days in the BBL. And you have to wonder how much Finch was contributing to the Raptors' intelligent offense they've been lauded for since Nurse's appointment. Not that Nurse isn't a great coach, obviously, but that is Finch's speciality. So what will be interesting to see at a time where the Raptors are going through a bit of a changing of the guard, whether they continue as we've seen them or whether they start trying to integrate new ideas and concepts with Finch leaving. And just on the topic of Chris Finch games that featured game winners, the 98 trophy final also featured a Terrell Myers buzzer beater and also had John Amici scoring 40 points for Sheffield in that game. One of the better individual performances I can remember in the BBL.
And to jump further on massive Chris Finch moments, he was also able to throw a kettle over a pub.
Of course, famously.
Okay, let's move on swiftly. DeMarcus Cousins is apparently parting ways with the Rockets. At the weekend, it was announced that they were guaranteeing his contract for the rest of the season. Then it felt like moments later, he was rumored to be leaving the franchise. He was taken out of practice yesterday. Apparently, that was an injury thing, but how much we believe that, I don't know. He's not been waived, so they must be looking for trade partners. Where do you think he could go, and what sort of team do you think he could contribute to at this point in his career? Because he's not what he used to be. He's averaging 9.6 points, 7.6 rebounds, 2.4 assists, and 1.5 blocks in 25 games for the Rockets. But this is not the DeMarcus Cousins that we know from Sacramento. This is the suffered many, many, many horrific injuries to his lower extremities and is no longer that beast he once was. So where do you think he can go and contribute at this point?
Well, I think it's been started to become defined as Boogie's role in the NBA, that he's going to go to a roster already full of talent and ready to contend to add some depth to the front court. So for me, it makes sense, as is being shared regularly on Twitter, is that the Nets is a rumour. Somewhere like the Clippers, somewhere like that might make sense. Someone is ready-made to contend, just needs that boost off the bench. I think my main takeaway from the chatter is that it has become somewhat disappointing to see him become such a journeyman in the league, because on entry into the league, he seemed to have kind of limitless upside. And the way it started with quite kind of positivity in Houston, being reunited with Wall, speaking out against the departing Harden, it hasn't worked out despite some steady contribution. But yeah, so to answer your question, I think maybe the Nets or the Clippers would be good fits.
So I'm going to probably take some flack for this one, but based on his skill set, and obviously depending on what he wants from his new situation, but solely based on how well I think he would fit on a particular team, I actually think the Knicks, because what the Knicks lack is exactly what Cousins is, which is in the time that So Julius Randle, not only because of Tibbs, but he basically plays the whole game because the Knicks can't replicate his skill set with any other player that they have. And Cousins is about as well equipped as anyone else in the NBA to do that. Kind of mostly below the rim, post scorer, plays from the elbow, can play make from the forward position. He's not asked to be the five necessarily because, doesn't defend the rim. But again, in the sets the Knicks run, that's not kind of expected from that position. So in terms of just a basketball fit, I genuinely think the Knicks would be a good fit for him. And what we have to assume is he wants to go to a contender. People will say the Nets. Again, I'm not entirely sold on that because I think what the Nets need from a big is rim protection more than anything and rebounding, which are his kind of declining attributes at this stage of his career with the injuries. The Lakers would make some sense as like insurance and alternative to Gasol and stuff like that. The other option I was actually thinking of was Portland, who are currently playing Enes Kanter massive, massive minutes. So even just as like an alternative option for them to have in a year where it looks like they're in a position to potentially be a threat, at least when they get guys like McCollum back, it could be a good move for someone like Portland too.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Do you see his, you know, it's inevitable that he's departing the Rockets at this point, it seems. Do you see his departure being anything other than being waived? Do you think there is a trade market out there for him?
Depends what they're asked for.
Yeah, it's all value dependent, isn't it? Because it's borderline impossible to put your finger on what Boogie is worth in a trade at this point.
I mean, the contract itself is minimal. It must be a vet's minimum, so that's not hard to make the money match. But what value? I don't get the move. They're obviously going for an asset. Yeah, they in doing the whole, you know, Chris Paul for Westbrook trade, they gave up a lot of assets. The Rockets did, so they must be trying to get some semblance of picks back to try and get something for the future. But is any team realistically giving up anything other than a potentially protected second round pick at some point for Boogie Cousins? And would they even give that up?
I think that might be it. I think, and it would have to come from someone who is ready to contend, might need that extra boost off the bench, you know, that front court depth, and doesn't think they'll be bad in the next two or three years, because I think you've basically nailed the value. Maybe a second round pick would be about all that made sense.
Yeah, and just bear in mind that Andre Drummond went for two expirings in the second round, two second round picks last year, one second round pick, and he's putting up significantly more numbers than DeMarcus Cousins. Anyway, let's move on from the Rockets. Let's do an All-Star draft. So the All-Star game is somehow going to be taking place on Sunday, March 7th. I believe on the 24th, so 2 days' time from time of recording, they're going to be doing a draft with the team captains, LeBron James and Kevin Durant, picking their own starting fives from the pool of players. I think tomorrow they announce the reserves, so they'll be included as well. We don't know the reserve at this point, so I thought I'd set the guys the task of drafting their starters from the pool of, it'll be effectively eight players because you will assume the identities and embody either LeBron or KD. So we need to decide which one of you is which to start off with, and we'll snake the draft in a minute. But I've created a question. I've chosen a question for you. Basically, closest person to the right answer gets to choose whether they're LeBron and pick first or whether they're KD. So LeBron James holds the record for most career All-Star points with almost 100 more than the second-placed Kobe Bryant. How many points does he have?
500.
Josh, you can just call higher or lower on that to decide.
I'm going to go for 501.
Okay, 385. Kobe had 290. So Nick wins. Nick, do you want to be LeBron or KD? And just for, you know, just to up the excitement levels, I've named them Team James and Team Kevin.
I feel like as the older party here, I should be LeBron.
Okay.
You could make an argument for male pattern baldness there, but I'll go.
I think that's relevant for both of those guys.
Yeah, both of them seem to be suffering from that.
Yeah, that's true.
Those bright lights don't leave you.
And I believe Josh is taller than me, so yeah, it makes sense in a lot of ways.
There we go. So team James, obviously you've got LeBron, that's you, Nick. Who are you taking with your first pick? So for those listening, whilst you think, you've got a choice of Luka Doncic, controversial, Steph Curry, Nikola Jokic, Kawhi Leonard from the West, or Kyrie, Bradley Beal, Giannis, or Embiid from the East.
So I toyed with picking Kyrie just to troll Kevin Durant, but I think I'm going to have Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Okay, there we go. Josh, Team Kevin, who are you picking with your first and second pick?
Using very basic logic here, I'm going for my pick for MVP this year, Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers in the front court.
Okay, and then who's your next pick? Because we're snaking the draft.
Oh, we're snaking it, are we? I'm going
snaking.
Someone I got some serious shit for on this podcast a few months ago, supporting his team vehemently. I'm going to go for Steph Curry at the point guard position.
So just to point out, it wasn't that you were supporting his team, it's that you picked them as the most likely to upset the Lakers for the Western Conference crown. I think that's what you got our shit for, but that's okay. That's fine. Okay, so you've got two front court, one back court. Nick, you've got two front court, and you have the next two picks.
I am picking Kawhi Leonard.
That's your front court field.
And I will pick Kyrie Irving. Ooh. Reuniting LeBron and Kyrie.
And it feels so good. Then... who have you got for your next two picks, Josh?
Well, Nick has absolutely destroyed me there because he's forced me into a position where I need to have two conventional centers in my starting lineup. So I'm going for Nikola Jokic as my second front court piece. So I've got Embiid and Jokic in the starting lineup. Love that.
This is the only podcast where having Nikola Jokic on your team will be a bad thing, by the way.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I was so dead set that I would get Kawhi before that. But anyway, I'm going for the Twin Towers in the front and I'm going to go for Luka Doncic.
Which leaves Bradley Beal as the fifth pick
leading scorer in the NBA, Bradley Beal.
Yeah, it sounds like such a, what's the word, a consolation prize. Kurt, can you throw a poll up to see, okay, we've had a word banned from a Knicks player. The banned word is a Knicks player who probably will be an all-star this year.
I think that's actually dubious. When you look at who is likely to make it, he may or may not make it.
Yeah, but the point I was making was trying to give you an obvious suggestion of who the person whose name is banned without saying it. Kurt, can you throw a poll up in the Twitch chat, please, to see which team people think will win out of Team James and Team Kevin? So we've got LeBron, Giannis, Kawhi, Irving and Bradley Beal versus Kevin Durant, Joel Embiid, Steph Curry, Luka Doncic and Nikola Jokic. Kirk's throwing that up in the chat. We'll see what people say and come back to that in a little bit. Let's move on to some Eastern Conference contenders because we are flying through the hour. Last week we did the West. Let's flip it. That's obvious. I've already said that. So the Philadelphia 76ers are 20-11 at the minute. First in the East, 13th on offensive rating, 6th defensive rating. They've lost 4 of the last 6, though. They do have Doc Rivers as their the new coach this season, who seems to have turned things around, along with a significant roster overhaul of some key pieces. They have, as Josh alluded to earlier, Joel MVP'd. Who's missed 6 games this season, which is pretty good by his standards. And of those 6, they've lost 5 of them. So how real are these guys to coming out the Eastern Conference finals to represent the East in the actual finals? That was a mouthful I didn't need to say. Are you confident these guys are going to be there challenging in the NBA finals? Or do you think that this is just not going to happen?
Well, I personally think that they're, last year we thought, well, certainly a lot of people thought that they were the kind of real deal. And the vision of the process was finally realized. I think it's more of the case this year, especially with someone I mentioned as to being one of the best man-to-man leaders in the NBA, in Doc Rivers now at the helm. The losses recently were quite concerning, but some of them were against really good basketball teams. But ultimately, I think it's going to be interesting to see what can happen, because they're a much more solid outfit on both ends than some of the, well, you know, let's talk about the main threat in the East, who I just feel might be able to flick a switch and completely transform when it matters, when, you know, when we reach the conference finals, etc. So I think that the real deal, it just, in a way, it just depends on how real Brooklyn is.
That's pretty fair. Nick, do you agree? Do you concur?
I think the things that have impressed me most about Philadelphia is the job Doc Rivers has done in, the thing that was missing from Philadelphia is players, is more like strictly defined roles between the stars. And I think what we've seen this year is Embiid really stepping up to the mantle of being the premier talent on this team. Simmons being content to accept his role as like one of the best perimeter defenders in the league, incredibly versatile, can switch on anyone, like 1 to 4, even 5 if it's like a smaller big, can play make, unstoppable in transition. He matches up with guys like LeBron, or those taller guys that those taller wings that other people struggle to match up with. He does that perfectly. Tobias Harris has looked way more comfortable this year. They're getting big contributions from Shake Milton and obviously Tybull, and they've looked very, very good. And what, as I was saying, what I like is you know what to expect out of them. But what I obviously, and they have Danny Green, so they're going to make the NBA Finals because that's what happens every year. But no, I completely agree with Josh that with Brooklyn having the players they do, who I've seen perform in big games as they have, I haven't really seen any of these Philly guys do it in a big playoff series. So until I see it in the playoffs, I'm just as cynical as I am with the Bucks or any other team who, or like Harden's Rockets in previous years, where they fly through the regular season and then look like a different team in the playoffs. So I'm kind of quietly confident they're going to be better than previous years, but until we see it, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, it's a similar thing to what we said about the Clippers last week, in that it's a see it, you know, believe it when we see it kind of thing. With the Sixers, the last time we saw them in the postseason was them falling apart against the Celtics last year. So you have to really believe that things have changed this year. One thing I would say is that Sixers fans should really enjoy this moment, because that thing I mentioned about the process being realized, you could not have hoped, you could not have told me 3 years ago that Embiid, after missing so much time and struggling so much to stay on the floor and out of trouble and in shape, stretching all the way to last year, staying in shape, that he would ever reach this level. I think, especially with the way that, you know, that bigs were being eradicated, I don't know the appropriate word to use there, but from the league, expunged from the league, and now here he is playing at an all-star, probably MVP level. I think enjoy the moment, because we sure as hell didn't think that it would get to this.
Yeah, you had me all the way until you said Sixers fans should enjoy this, and I thought that's ridiculous, because Sixers fans, Philadelphia fans, are notorious for not enjoying anything. But no, I think that those are all fair points. They are certainly looking very, very strong thus far. But you've mentioned it, both of you have mentioned it, the Brooklyn Nets. They've overtaken Milwaukee. Now they sit in second in the East with 20-12 record. Their 118.6 offensive rating is easily the first best in the league, one of the best of all time. But their 26th ranked D is obviously what people are looking at. Eerily similar to the very early 2000s Lakers, who had a top ranked offense and one of the worst defenses in the league. They've just won 6 straight. They're the first Eastern Conference team to win 5 straight on a Western Conference road trip since 2010. They're kind of cooking. Since Harden's arrival, they're 13-6. Before that, they were 7-6. You've both stated there are sort of, you want to see how good these guys really are, but I mean, this team is really, really good.
Yeah, they have all the upside in the world. don't they? Of course. I mean, I don't think that they're going to top the East in the postseason. I think that the kind of steady as she goes approach of the Sixers will eventually be the case. I think that the Nets will have their kind of catastrophic defensive nights, you know, in patches throughout the season. And I think ultimately, in terms of the seeding, it will fall in the Sixers' favour. But when as I keep saying, as soon as the postseason arrives and everybody locks in, I think it's just going to be a completely different team. And all of the narratives we've stored up over the last year will be completely irrelevant because they're just extremely difficult, you know, for anyone, including Philadelphia, to beat, or at least to stop scoring the basketball.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to say, I can't doubt the talent level, and it's simple as that. I think for all the stats about defense, I think when you've got three of the most talented offensive players I've ever seen play basketball on a single team, it kind of helps win games anyway. And I think one of the things, particularly in the NBA now, is that offense always beats defense. So the fact they're the best offense is more important to me than that they're currently the worst defense. I think the thing that'd be fascinating to me is if they matched up with Philly in the playoffs. Watching Embiid against this Nets roster as is currently constructed would be the closest thing to going back and watching Shaq, probably, in terms of the kind of physical advantage he'd have. But I still don't think that would be enough because three is more than two at the end of the day. And they have... So the combination of their backcourt and obviously KD, you can drop 50 in any game. It's just like, I just can't look past their top, and even past their top tier. Like, I'm a huge Joe Harris guy in terms of, I think he's an underrated defender. He's shooting even better than usual this season because he's getting better looks because of those guys. And it doesn't even really matter the fact they struggle to get all of those guys on the same court at the time at the moment, because any one of them, as like James Harden does in some games, is good enough to win games on his own anyway. So, it's a bit sad for me because I'm not the biggest fan of these like huge talent groupings, but I also completely appreciate how unbeatable that team seems to me in a playoff series.
I was going
to
say, you do seem like, yeah, you might not be the biggest fan, but you still seem like you're quite a fan of conglomerate talent pools.
No, I'm a fan of all of those players. I just find it a bit miserable when one team can have so many of them.
Is it odd that with Kyrie, obviously he's taken the secondary role to Harden at the point now, and with KD having to still sit games occasionally, whether that be COVID protocol or just rest because he suffered a horrific injury, are you surprised at all that Harden's appeared as like a glue guy on this team? He's just fit in seamlessly and is holding everyone together on the offensive end, certainly on every single night.
Not really, because a lot of the pouting and the turbulence from Harden that has played a part in his career so far has come from people relying on him to come through and to carry them. And he hasn't taken that role very well. There's absolutely no need for him to have that role in this team. He can go and do his thing, be positive. Why wouldn't you be positive when you're playing basketball on the same team as those two guys? Well, especially Kevin Durant.
I also think a lot of stuff about James Harden is... he's kind of built this, not really a negative reputation, but a lot of people kind of are down on him because of like either his physical appearance and like, say, looks out of shape, or kind of almost like speculation about his character, when he's actually like an incredibly private guy for how good of a basketball player he is. Like, you never really... He's not crazy on social media. He doesn't really say anything. He's a bit like Kawhi in some ways. Like, it's difficult to know who James Harden is as a person, in my opinion. So I feel like it doesn't surprise me at all, because I don't really have any preconceived notion that I know who James Harden is as a person, like you do with someone like LeBron, say, where you feel like you have a better understanding of what makes him tick.
Yeah, no cameras in clubs is all I'm going to say to that. Okay, so let's move on to the Bucks. They slipped to third seed, slipped into the third seed with an 18-13 record. Their offense has jumped from eighth last season to third this year, but the defense, which is what they honed last season's campaign on, has slipped from first to 10th. Their net rating is still second in the league. They've just lost five of the last seven. Giannis is averaging less than 29 minutes per game, less minutes than last season. They got criticised a lot for being a regular season only team, focusing too much on that. Is it possible that the sort of the bashing they're getting now for not being as good is just that they're playing the game of let's try some different things out, let's see what we can do to adjust differently for the postseason next year and not take the regular season as we need the first seed to get through?
That's a really interesting way to look at it. I was almost thinking of it in the complete opposite way of if they've been so unbelievably consistent and solid throughout the last two seasons and then underwhelmed in the postseason, you should be terrified that they're not steady and consistent this year, because that five-game loss streak scared me. From Bucks' point of view, look, losing to the Suns and Jazz, and that's no concern because those are some top teams. The Thunder and the Raptors twice without the ability to kind of bounce back when they should have felt like they'd been hit in the mouth by the Raptors, and they didn't respond. For a team you're hoping will reverse that underwhelming postseason reputation that they have in recent years, I think it's a concern. I think it's the opposite. I think it's a concern that they're not waiting until the postseason to shit the bed.
Nick, are we seeing the Bucks shit the bed before the postseason arrives?
I find this team hard to have a strong opinion on, in that I look at their team and I really feel like I like a lot of their individual players, and obviously they've been incredibly good as a unit for numerous seasons now. But I still look at that team and feel like they lack an additional shot creator. There's a lot of guys, they've got spot-up shooters. Chris Middleton's played well. He stepped up a bit, I think. Giannis is Giannis. He's going to do what he does. But I feel like coming to the end of a game where you need someone who can create a shot, Giannis isn't necessarily that guy, and we've seen that in the playoffs. We watched it in international basketball a few summers ago, and I don't even mean that in a negative way. It just hasn't really become like a strong part of his game, but he's so dominant, it doesn't really matter. He makes up for it in other ways. But I feel like they need someone else to be a real threat for a title who can create their own shot, because I don't see against other teams like Brooklyn, say, in a close game, who are you picking out of those teams to create a better shot the last five possessions, say? I don't think there's any contest there.
Yeah, that's where it definitely seems unfair that the Nets have that conglomerate of shot creators.
So you think maybe like a Bogdanović would have been useful for them at this point?
Yeah,
then,
you not could to rub say that so. In.
Probably, yeah.
Okay, let's quickly move on to then the rest of the pack, really. So there's a really tight pack between the fourth and eighth seed, with just like a game separating Indiana, Toronto, Boston, the Knicks, and the Hornets. Who else from that tight pack can you see coming out as a contender? And equally, is there anyone in there that you thought would have been a contender and perhaps have not performed up to expectations so far?
Mike, this is an alley-oop for me, isn't it?
I have got it in brackets, lost 25-point lead to the Pelicans last night.
Well, no, the answer to your first question is there's nobody else that I see contending, barring multiple roster adjustments before the deadline for Boston. I do think Boston are in a position where we haven't seen the team they're going to be taking to the postseason, and we won't see for a couple of weeks. But as it stands in the current formation, no one's even getting close to the teams that we've already mentioned.
You're nodding, Nick. You concur.
Yeah, I think Boston's obviously the biggest disappointment so far this season for a number of different reasons. I think of those teams, I genuinely, not just because I'm a fan, I think the Knicks would be an awkward matchup for a lot of teams because they're one of the top defensive teams, and they in certain games, if they get hot from three, a lot of times whether the Knicks make threes or not decide the game, because their defense is ever present and they either hit shots or they don't. And so in the wrong game, especially in a first round series, they could be pretty awkward for any of the teams. But I think Indiana's, from what I've seen at least, is probably the best team so far out of those other teams, unless Boston starts looking more like the team we expected them to be, obviously. But for just based on current performances, I think Indiana's probably the best team out of those. Again, but none of them are challenging the top teams.
I tend to agree with Indiana being the most balanced, best team. But Toronto are turning a corner, it feels like. So I wouldn't be surprised if they suddenly leap their way up and are pushing for that third seed.
Not without Chris Finch.
Good old Finchy. Let's move on to our regular fun segment that is nothing but Nick's silly nonsense. I will hand over to my former friend and now nemesis. Go for it.
Oh, I'm going to actually, let me find it. Okay, so nonsense this week. Fashions come and go, and we see this with changing trends in the NBA. One of the major shifts in the past 20 years or so was the rise of super baggy jerseys and shorts, and now the absolute reversal with the kind of short shorts are back. And even like, I'm actually hearing we've gone full circle now, and the kids are bringing back baggy jeans again, which is a thing now. But in your opinion, what was the apex mountain for the super large shorts and jerseys look? Could be a specific game you watch, a pop culture movement, a movie, an album cover, Slam magazine cover, anything. I'm interested in hearing what your picks are.
I think you're going to go first with your examples. What have you got for yours?
Okay, so already visible down there, and not to condone any of his alleged offences, of course, but in 2002, when the R. Kelly Ignition video came out, I was 18 years old. I was gone into sick form. I got away from school uniforms and into clothes that I could choose for myself to wear every day. It was the time of house parties and legal alcoholic beverage drinking. So this song spent 4 weeks at number one. It was one of the first times I remember like hip hop aesthetics becoming like truly mainstream, something which I'd kind of had in my kind of locker for a long time, being an NBA fan and like listening to hip hop and stuff. So also like TV music channels were massive at this point. Like, so like MTV Bass would be playing this video like every 10 minutes sort of thing. Also, I was impressed with R. Kelly's ability to effortlessly pull off like hand sweatbands, which have never been a thing apart from in this video, but he somehow made it look pretty cool. But yeah, jerseys down to the knees, Hummer limo before it was a cliche, Celtics jersey. So Josh will appreciate that. That's why I picked it.
Man, I remember after academy practices rolling around in my friend's silver, not a Fiesta. What was it? Slightly bigger than a Fiesta. Whatever it was. Maybe it was a Fiesta. I don't know. But five of us in that with the windows down in that plane. It was just terrible, but brilliant at the same time. Josh, what have you gone with?
So I wanted to move away slightly from the perverted pop culture icons. My pick is both an iconic jersey fit, as you'll see below, but also a pivotal moment in pop culture, the video for Nelly and Kelly's Dilemma. In this video, not necessarily related to the fact that Kelly tries to send messages via Microsoft Excel, but Nelly walks out of the cinema with another girl wearing a below knee. And I'm talking mid-shin length. That's where we're at. We're at mid-shin. Harlem Globetrotters jersey. Yeah, it's not just a baggy jersey moment, but it almost such an iconic baggy jersey moment that it overshadows an excellent pop song.
Do you know what this definitely was as well? Apex Mountain for random plaster on your face.
It's perhaps the only moment with Larry Hughes in it that is still circulating somewhere in popular culture. Because for those out there who just watch that, that's Larry Hughes standing in the queue with the cinema, who was a high-flying guardian, was in one of the dunk contests, and was an endorser of Air Alert 2, if I recall correctly. That's another excellent choice.
Just to elaborate, I think on what Nick said, it's the plaster goat. Is it like Nelly is the plaster goat?
Wasn't it in honor of his brother or cousin who was in prison at the time, and he wore it until he was released, essentially? Or am I just going completely the wrong way on this?
I thought he just had a boo boo.
Cut himself shaving. I almost got this completely wrong. So the first thing I went with was the image that stands out in my mind of the baggy era is TJ Ford at the rookie photo shoot when they sent him the wrong Milwaukee Bucks uniform. So they sent a 6 foot guard, a 7 foot guy's uniform. And as if go and Google it, it's an incredible photo of him just stood there in basically shorts that come down to his socks. And these are ankle socks. It's insane. But the video, we all went for exactly the same era of video, so the Apex Mountain is like 01 to 03. I went with P. Diddy's Bad Boy for Life because this was just, this dropped whilst I was out in New Jersey at a camp. And I had to buy it, and it was just incredible. Shaq's in the video, absolute banging tune, lots of jerseys in there. And it was just like I'm going to go out and say it. I thought I was going to grow up to be much bigger and blacker than it turned out I was in the end. So I was in New York, I went and bought a Sean Marion jersey. I was actually trying to buy a Darius Miles Clippers jersey, and thankfully they'd sold out of them. So I got a guy who actually, you know, no disrespect to Darius Miles, but Sean Marion should be in the Hall of Fame. It's like a 54. Or something like that. I brought it back and I was like, I put it on and I was like, this is huge. And I was like a scrawny 17-year-old. And I had a mate's mum tailor it and take it in by like 4 inches. And it's still too big for me.
That's incredible. Well, were you trying to make it kind of muscle fit, right?
Well, just, you know, decently baggy, but not to the point where I could like put my arms inside the sleeves whilst I was playing and move them. but yeah, it's an incredible jersey. And it's an incredible tune as well. Absolutely love that tune. But obviously we've all gone for exactly the same era. And there's the TJ Ford. Cheers to Kirk for pulling that up. Those are some incredible shorts.
That's insane.
What an awesome Nick Silly nonsense that was. Moving on quickly because we're running out of time and still got listener questions to do. So let's go to Talking D on Discord. Come join us, discord.me/doubleclutch. Get involved in all the channels and the conversations. We've had chats this week on the validity of NBA teams using the phrase world champs to describe their success. Nick has set up a random wrestling channel, which I'm so pleased he did, and immediately muted it because I don't know half the stuff that's going on in there. To the point where literally, didn't you have Mr. T the other week as a picture with Thibodeau's head? And my first reaction when I saw the silhouette was, that's Tatanka.
Even Tatanka has not featured in random wrestling channel yet. So it was good obscure wrestling knowledge.
I'm too random for random wrestling. We've got the Fantasy League still going. Nottingham Gam are still undefeated and still trying to swindle everyone with their bizarre one-sided trade deals. Nick, you've managed to get off out of the bottom two. How's it going for you?
It's a frustrating season, and I think obviously everyone's impacted, but it just feels like as soon as any of my good players are either not injured, have COVID or whatever, I lose others. And so it feels like I never actually have, and like they're good enough where, so like Andre Drummond currently, for example, not playing, but I'm not going to drop him. So it's like I just keep having these things where I never have a decent team through a course of a week. And obviously it's improved a little bit recently, which is how I managed to pick up a few wins. But yeah, pretty frustrating season so far for me.
Yeah, well, there's only 6 more matchups before we hit the playoffs. So hopefully you can get up a couple more spots and get into one of those playoff slots. So let's get into the listener questions. Hoopin and Lutin, shout out to them you're getting lots of free advertising on today's pod. Nick's got the jersey on. And we've got a couple of questions for him. But the first one, having become a member of the previously addressed Bucketheads, if you didn't catch that episode a few weeks back, go and Google what an Australian Buckethead is in terms of their BBL, which is their Big Bash Cricket League. God, that was pretty good memory for me. What players would you have advertising what fast food joints and why? I'll come to you first, Josh.
Well, I'd have DeMarcus Cousins promoting either Popeye, Pizza Hut, Domino's, Wingstop, or any of the other major relevant food places that aren't, you know, don't already have high profile commercials, just so they can play one of my all time favorite media scrum moments, where Boogie was asked about controlling his weight in the off season. And with a straight face, but a tongue in his cheek, he said, "I was eating candy, ice cream, pizzas, whole pizzas. When I went to New York, that's all I ate. Pizzas, funnel cakes. I love gummy worms, love fried food, fried shrimp, fried fish, fried chicken." It was beautiful. Go, if you haven't seen that clip, go and watch it.
Nick, who have you got?
I have a few, so I'll reel them off quickly. So first of all, it was an absolute travesty that Starbucks or any other coffee chain did not jump on Jimmy Butler immediately and actualize Big Face Coffee into a real thing as soon as that happened. Five Guys, I've actually gone for the entire Detroit Pistons because I think that is how a casual fan would currently describe their starting five. I thought Sacramento could rebrand as the Sacramento Burger Kings. And I have cheeky Nando De Colo, who is a French player currently playing for Fenerbahce.
Oh, that's excellent.
Just five guys. Yeah. Sorry, I'm struggling.
That's brilliant. I've gone with Jason Terry, a 19-year vet, an NBA champion, sixth man of the year, who religiously ate chicken nuggets before each game. So if you want McDonald's to tell you how healthy their food is, get a guy talking about how he managed to last on an elite level in the NBA for almost two decades. And like, I went down the rabbit hole in this one because I remembered he also wore like five pairs of tube socks as another superstition he had, which meant he had to wear shoes that were a size up. And some of the superstitions, this is a weird tangent, some of the superstitions this guy had are just bizarre. So the night before each game, he would wear the opposing team's uniform shorts to bed. Why? What? Why? How? How? And if he missed consecutive shots in the first quarter, he'd change his sneakers at their quarter break.
That's bizarre.
It's just absolutely bizarre. Anyway, enough about Jason Terry
sorry,
and his random
superstitions. Sorry, can I just think that I've just thought of one on the spot and I'm really proud of it. I think that Lou Williams should do something like Wingstop just to say, "I'm Lou Williams and I'd do anything for the Wings."
It's true. Comment in the from Jay Pistons, who's just followed us as well, so thanks for the follow. He's got tattooed the NBA trophy before he won it. Yeah, he did. The season before, yeah, they aren't tattooed, which is just another incredible ballsy move. Okay, Matt Hardy at UK Nets fans. He put a tweet out essentially about what phrases that Americans would be confused by the British. So basically he wants to know what British phrases could NBA in the UK use that would confuse Americans. He's gone with absolute piss take and chuffed to bits. I actually spent more time on this than anything else preparing for this show. Josh, have you got any examples?
Yeah, to kind of bounce off what he's already said with piss take, I'd go for just pissed because obviously that causes some initial confusion mm-hmm. around anger and alcohol consumption. And then I'd just go for one of my favourite words, which is numpty, just because I think they'd be completely perplexed.
Nick, what have you
I'd
got?
Actually like to see some rhyming slang going in there. So like...
Yes!
So like instead of money, it could be apple and honey when someone hits a three, for example. I think, yeah, that would fuck them up.
Yeah. So in terms of... I've got two sections, so I'm going to limit them. But imagine if they were like, Ruby Murray pulls up from three. He went at the apple and pears for that one. And no butcher's pass. You completely fuck them up. and then in terms of non-rhyming slang, I've gone with dodgy, knackered, played a binder, chock-a-block, dog's dinner, minging, poppycock, skew whiff, spend a penny, take the biscuit, wangle, wind your neck in, and then my favourite, which is really Alan Partridge's Guide to the World Cup 1994, is over-egg the pudding.
Nice.
Yes.
Question from Rich Barrett, some more free advertising for Hoopin' and Lootin'. If you watched Elliot Shirts and Giggles show on Saturday, you would have witnessed the abomination that was his shirt selection. And Kirk's just flipped it up on screen for those watching on twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk. In your time doing Double Clutch podcasts over video, what do you recall being the biggest fashion faux pas in Double Clutch history? has anyone got anything for this? Because, yeah, okay, there's nodding heads. Yeah, go for it.
Firstly, I want to put myself out there and say that I appreciate some flair in the shirt game, and I actually don't mind Elliot's choice there. So respect to Elliot. And I also kudos to him for growing the beard out and moving on from the mustache. But I always think personally that Nick has worn a Knicks jersey by accident, and I usually expect him to kind of change just before we go live. But, you know, somehow it's coming back into fashion this year, so he might be okay. Something I was sure that one of you would mention is there was a podcast that I remember looking back on maybe just before Christmas. No, it was earlier last year where I came on with a tie-dye T-shirt and a black eye. Yeah, and I think I don't think a black eye is the best accessory, so I'm going to nominate myself there as well.
First of all, I just want to point out that in this photo, Elliot looks like a young Phil Spencer from Kirsty and Phil, the property TV show.
He does.
But I think for fashion faux pas, I also picked myself. And I've gone for this weekend, I was driven to cut my own hair, which I've never done before. But like any podcast I've been on in the past few weeks, I'm picking my own hair in any of those.
Fair enough. I did notice you'd cut your hair, and I was like, that's really short at the sides. But, you know, fair play, you cut it yourself. That's ballsy. I think the reindeer was a bad decision for me to wear the reindeer onesie at Christmas because I was just sweating balls.
That was worth it.
Because I had a Giannis top over the top as well, yeah. What's he wearing? Like, it looks like someone's told him to iron his shirt, and he's tried to do that, you know, up there, and all he's got is a waffle maker in the house. It's ridiculous. Saying that, I'm pretty sure I had something similar about 25 years ago, but in flip reverse. There was a top the other week. I can't remember if it was Tom or you, Josh. You had one that said association.
Oh, yeah.
You had like, it was like, and it, all you could read was ass.
It was last week. I also wore it on another podcast just before. Sorry for cheating. But it says, from when you can only see half of my torso, it just says basketball ass. So I would say that's a faux pas.
Yeah, definitely. But no, it made me laugh. Another question from Hoopin and Luton. He's just filling us up with questions this week, which is all good. With the 76ers deciding to bizarrely honour Chatsworth Estate from Shameless on their City Edition jersey, what fictional towns, cities, estates would you like to see other NBA teams honour? Now, I mean, I've seen Shameless ages ago. God knows when that was. I did not make any link between the shirts looking like they were the Chatsworth Estate, but... What have you picked for your choices of fictional places?
I've gone for Gotham City. I think the Knicks could really upset Brooklyn by doing a kind of blackout style Batman themed jersey and going with the Nets colorway, but Batman style, honoring both Gotham City and everyone's favorite angsty billionaire vigilante.
Nick, what have you got?
So weirdly, I had the same choice for the same reason, but I also had others. So I'll go through the others. In light of rebranding bad teams, I've gone for Minnesota, who can look to the world of Game of Thrones Westeros and just completely rebrand as the Minnesota Direwolves instead of Timberwolves. I've got Hogwarts for the Wizards. Seems to make sense. South Park for the Nuggets. Obviously, that's meant to be in Colorado. And the obvious one is Jurassic Park for the Raptors.
That's pretty good.
Very good.
I think when The Simpsons hit some kind of like 50 years or something, every team should do a Springfield one because it's supposed to, you're not supposed to be able to tell where in the US Springfield is. So I think that would be quite good.
That would be cool.
And then I've recently finished Community. The series. So if Denver did a Greendale College or Greendale Town, that would be cool. And then it put me on to, okay, Pawnee. Indiana could do the Parks and Rec Pawnee. Philly could do Scranton from The Office, that sort of thing. Just iconic shows based in those states.
Yeah.
So another question from Nets Fans UK. True or nah? And this started off a couple of subsequent questions as well. So true or nah, the Nets have the best backcourt in the NBA?
Well, yeah, okay. Yes, of course they do.
I think I would say it depends how you... to clarify what I'm saying, if it's which team... which backcourt do I expect to have an amazing game tomorrow? Yes. If we're still waiting things like past achievement, then no, it's Steph and Clay.
I also think it's... I actually, my caveat that I didn't mention was that they have the best healthy backcourt in the league until Clay returns. I still think the dynamic between Steph and Clay is pretty much unguardable. So I would have them at best if healthy. So currently they definitely do. But in terms of overall talent in rosters, I would say Stephen Clay remains the top.
I went exactly the same way. And my response was offensively right now, true. But that's it. Then that was expanded upon by Suns Fans UK, Matt Elvey. It'd be cool if you guys could rank the top five backcourts in the league. So this sort of spun on that. So have you listed your one to five? So if we all named our fives and then work our way. Okay. Let's go with who you've got number five, Josh.
I've got Kemba Walker and Jaylen Brown at number five.
So do I. Who have you got, Nick?
Mike Conley and Donovan Mitchell.
Ooh. I've forgotten about the Jazz again.
Saucy.
So easy to do. That's really good pick. Number four. Nick.
Oh, sorry.
Bradley, sorry. Beal and Russell Westbrook.
So I've got a number four. This is this sounds like I'm just taking your answers, but I will show you the shared doc. Josh, who have you got at number four?
Well, this is going to be really saucy because I haven't even got those in my five. Lillard and McCollum, I've got. I'm going by the logic of health. I've got them at number four.
Okay. So who have you got at three?
Chris Paul and Devin Booker.
Ooh. Nick, who have you got at
three? Chris Paul and Devin Booker.
Ooh, I've got Dame and CJ at three. So, Nick, who have you got at two?
Dame and CJ.
Josh, who have you got at two?
Kyrie and Harden.
You just said that they had the best backcourt in the league currently.
Yeah.
So, okay, let's
pick them one.
Right, okay.
They're the best.
No, I've seen what you... Yeah, no, I know, but Josh has picked them second.
Yeah, I picked them second based on the...
Because you're going to pick the Warriors first.
Yes.
I've discounted them because they're injured. Okay, but that's fine. That I thought something really spicy was happening then. So second, I've got Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Have we had your second place, Nick?
Yeah, Dame and CJ were second, and then
so first you've got Kyrie and Harden. Then okay, that was getting very very spicy for a second then. But it turns out it was false alarm. Which then spouted another question. I'm more interested, from Richard Fang, in what you guys think is the best backcourt of all time. So, Nick, who have you got as your best backcourt in the NBA of all time?
Ah, see, I did a top five.
I've done a top four.
Okay, so just to clarify, how I've weighted these is a little bit different. Because I think when you're talking all time, longevity counts and general levels of iconicness also count. So, like... let me explain what I mean. So some of my honorable mentions, like Steve Nash and Kobe Bryant, they didn't really... talent level was there, but obviously they didn't achieve what they could have done with those guys involved. So shall I run through my five? So
yeah,
at five, I had Chauncey Billups and Rip Hamilton. Four, Earl Monroe and Walt Frazier. Three, Isaiah Thomas, Joe Dumars. Two, Tony Parker and Manu, and one, Stephen Clay. Okay. And again, so like some of my other honourable mentions, just to call them out, Terry Porter and Clyde Drexler in those early 90s Portland, Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, early Golden State years, James Harden and Chris Paul, just talent level, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, talent level, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, we don't know what that's going to be yet, but talent level, Steve Nash and Kobe, biggest what if, Damian Lillard and Brandon Roy could have been something special. Yeah.
Nice.
Well,
Josh.
I firstly want to address something that I saw mentioned on Twitter from some guilty parties that are currently on the Twitch stream, which is, let's address the fact that Kyrie and Harden aren't close to this conversation because they've played under half a season together and haven't even played a truly notable game yet. So let's hold our horses. I went for a weird combination of achievements in the league and fit together, which is kind of why I said Steph and Clay currently, because I think they attribute to winning basketball more than anyone else when they're paired together on the court. I went for Magic Johnson and Michael Cooper because they won five titles, and we already know of Magic's individual accolades, but you know, because he was, when he was winning MVPs and final MVPs, Cooper actually made eight all defensive teams in a row and was defensive player of the year during that spell. So I'm going with Johnson and Cooper.
Well, you've named all of mine. In fourth place, I had Magic and Michael, and I seem to be pixelated on the Twitch stream at the minute, which is really quite bizarre. In third place, I had Tony and Manu. In second place, I had Isaiah Thomas and Joe Dumars. And then number one, I took Steph and Clay. So we're all pretty much in the same ballpark as to which pairs we were looking at as the top pairs. Let's go on to games of the week, because we've run really long now, and Matt's going to cry when he has to edit this later. games of the week. Josh, who have you got?
Nuggets Blazers tomorrow night, which is obviously a late tip at 3 a.m., but... a team that keep defying logic in the Blazers against the really strong team in the Nuggets.
Nick, who have you got?
I have Clippers at the Bucks on Sunday. Early tip-off, which I weigh heavily because of my ability to watch it live and fully conscious, which is good. But also just because, like we've talked about in the last few pods, these are teams I have skepticisms around. So I'm curious to watch that game.
Yeah, no, that's a good shout. I've gone for what I expect to be a high-scoring affair. My love for the Suns continues. I'm taking Phoenix at Chicago at 1 a.m. Friday night. I'm expecting a big game from Zach LaVine, and just want to see what those Suns do in general. I'm expecting them to win by a fairly decent amount, but I just think big numbers from Zach LaVine is always something good to get people watching. Let's quickly go on to the end of the show then, I guess. So thank you to everyone for dropping in tonight. Thank you for the comments that have been firing away. I've not been able to keep up with them all at all. We had follows on Twitch from Ricky Baby. We had from Jay, the Welsh word for Wales. What's it? Is it Cymru or Cymru? Where's Hugh Hopkins when you need him? Standard. And we also had J_Pistons. I wonder if they're the same person with two different usernames, but we're going to tell you that it's not. But thank you to those people who have followed us. Thank you to everyone who's jumped on Discord this week and chatted away. We will see you next week as we usually do, but we promise we won't be retiring. We will be back. We will be harder, better, faster, stronger. See you then.
I think that your time is done, and I think that the spotlight should go on top of me.
Yeah.